The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, and cucumbers shoved up random asses. Viewer's discretion is advised. And today it's like raining, so it's gonna completely make the atmosphere of the podcast all the more haunting. Welcome to the 15th episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish, a podcast hosted by my beautiful ass, I mean sass, I am Koi, the newly now 12-souled half-celestial. And newsflash, my cat went missing on Sunday, like 2 days back, and for about 13 hours, and I haven't properly slept ever since. I'm not sure why. So yeah, there's that. And there's going to be a lot of background noise today because I'm recording it at 3 and most probably I'm going to be sleeping in 15 minutes and then I'm going to wake up again and re-record it. So it's going to be a roller coaster. I'm just half a god. I cannot control everything. Today, we are going to talk about the Georgian Lake, which is kind of shaped like a circumcised river. It's called Lake Lanier. Liner, according to a lot of podcasts that I heard, and Lanier, I think. Like, I've written Lanier, I'm not sure it's because it sounds wrong, according to a YouTube video I saw. So I'm gonna go with Lake Lanier because it's easier to speak. Now, a fishy fact about this lake is that it holds the record for catching the largest catfish in USA. So there's that. And now let us go bait some fish for fishy news now. So first off, the headline reads, Burglar falls asleep when robbing house, gets woken up by cops who arrested him. You know, this is what happens when you don't listen to a good true crime slash paranormal slash rewriting reality podcast such as mine, and you decide to like rob a house like a noob, and that is what's gonna happen. You're gonna devastatingly fail. So now the first line of the article, it goes like, when fatigue and lethargy takes over, our mind and body does not function properly, and sometimes we end up doing things we regret. I mean, this line basically sums up my entire sex life. I'm not feeling attacked at all. The line immediately after this is, as hilarious as it sounds, 22-year-old burglar in Thailand dozed off while robbing a police officer's house. Brackets. Oh, the irony! Exclamation mark. You know, honestly, I was very skeptical about this news source, but you know, the article was entertaining. I'm still iffy about it, but boys just wanna have fun. It's Girls Wanna Have Fun, and I love this song. I share all the songs that I love on my Instagram story, so you better follow me. And yeah, so later on it says that he was arrested after Jiam, I do not know how to pronounce this properly, I should have looked this up before. Jiam is basically the police officer in whose house he decided to rob. And Jiam noticed that the AC was running in his daughter's bedroom while she wasn't home. I mean, I do not know if he was able to steal anything worthwhile, but I'm pretty sure he was able to steal a good night's sleep. So, addressing this news seriously, what the fuck? That's all that I have to say about it. Moving on. Why are cats scared of cucumbers? I mean, I do not know. You tell me, if you put a cucumber in front of somebody's face or inside somebody's ass, would they be scared? Would you be scared? I mean, tell me in the comment section, what do you think of cucumbers being shoved up inside you, outside you, in front of you, whatever. Also, on talking about commenting section in part, you guys are commenting so much on Castbox and I'm absolutely in love with you guys. I'm really, really glad for that. I mean, my previous episode for the 14th one is the hottest comment in United States. I mean, I am famous or what, bitch? Also, there's this person in the comment section who shall not be named, who is kind of bullying other people by being homophobic, racist, sexist, horny, and like seriously horny, and all other negative ists all right. And I really do not know how to react to him. I really don't want to give him the enough amount of validation by, you know, responding to each and every one of his comment. But I just want to say, whatever you guys do, I support you. And if he dies, you are all murder suspects. So moving on with the article about cucumbers and cats. Placing a cucumber behind a cat causes them to leap into the air in fright. Now try this on your fucking human, alright, and see what happens. Then do your goddamn research. Now listen to me, you freaky assholes. I know I'm overreacting, but why are you subjecting animals to weird ass torture? I mean, literally weird ass torture. You are legit putting cucumbers behind their asses and you're and you're like, oh my god, you reacted so weirdly. Oh my god, no. The only animal one may experiment on is either my best friend or Donald Jr. Trump, or as I like to call him, DJ Trump. Further on in the article, it says, with a startled response, a cat will only try to get out of there as quickly as possible and then reassesses from a distance, she said, explaining their terrified reaction. I mean, yeah, if somebody wants to shove a cucumber up my ass and they suddenly put it behind me, I'd also jump off no matter how fun it sounds to me, you know. I'll move away, reassess the situation. You saw what I did there, right? And then see what I'm gonna do. And like in the end, it says that Miss Goldman said it was also possible that cats may associate the cucumbers with snake, which can be a deadly predator. I mean, you still don't get it, do you? I cannot even correct you. You are a most probable virgin lady or something. I mean, addressing this seriously, why are you putting cucumbers behind cats, giving them anxiety? Do it on your own, not your fucking cats. I can give more attention to this cucumber chugging idiots. Talking about idiots, off onto out of the blue. And you know, when I was typing blue, I first typed it as bleh. Then I typed it as B-L-O-U. And I was like, oh my god, what is the spelling of blue? But before we move on to it, I need you guys to hear me talk about something I truly believe in the following ad. I hope you enjoyed that, because what's coming next, I'm pretty sure you're not gonna. So basically, I was watching this anime called Hunter x Hunter, wherein I was nearing the ending arc and there's some like major villain thingy happening, and there are people who are aging from fear. Like they come in contact with the aura, frightening aura of this person, and they age from fear. And this was something which was very, very fascinating to my brain. So I started to research on it. Yes, I did find some research papers which were like anxiety fastens the aging process, but in the anime it showed that just being near the person in 2 days, you've aged like 60 years or something. Like you don't have enough hair anymore. You're really old. You've got wrinkles and shit. And I spent 7 fucking hours trying to find documentaries, some proof that somebody got so scared that they aged 60 years in like 2 hours or something. I know it sounds very stupid now, but at that time I did not really realize it. I kept on like going on with it, like reading through research papers, trying to find any kind of paranormal correlation with anything whatsoever, but nothing. So this week there's no real out of the blue. However, something fun did happen in my life. So I was like, okay, if I don't want to research it, let me tell you about that shit. Okay, so this one, it basically relates to kind of with the previous episode of astral projection and all that thing. So remember the friend who had a dream about me? So the same friend had this fun dream, and I asked him to send me a text of it, like with pointers. So if I like mess up speaking, please ignore that. It's 3:30 in the morning. So he writes, grandpa incident. So he was basically sleeping in a room where his dead grandfather used to sleep. And at the time he was sleeping, he was facing his tarot cards. And when he closed his eyes, he felt as if he was in a car. And he closed his eyes like he could feel the momentum of going left and right, the turns. Okay. But just in his case, it was going left, right, up and down, and at a very, very fast pace. what he was able to see was darker lines on dark, like, you know, how Doraemon travels through time in the time machine, and it's like black, blue, white thingies and clock flies. In his case, there was this basic tunnel of black wherein there were little like things floating around. And then after a little while, when everything stopped and his eyes were still closed, when our eyes are closed and somebody like points a light source at them, we see that light thing but not quite see it, you know. And he felt that thing, and the light went also left and right and stuff, and he was not able to open his eyes for 2 minutes. And the next memory he has of after this is that he went to sleep and woke up. And he, as soon as he woke up, he went to his actual bed in his own room. And that's about it. So when I asked my cards, they were basically like, he visited the passageway wherein his grandfather was stuck at. Like, he's kind of at the conveyor belt wherein the souls travel to wherever they're destined to travel to. It was a weird reading, but there's it. So there were a lot of things that maybe he was maybe attached to them, or he just became sensitive enough that he ended up entering that, and so on and so forth. So that's the fun thing that happened, which you guys might want to know, because I really do not know a lot about it. And yeah, and my cat has entered the podcasting space. Since I'm fancy. Him entering the room at the right time, and I really need to tell you guys this, that this episode has been slapped together, literally slapped together so quickly. The story I wrote at 1:30 a.m., like about 2.5 hours back, because the one which was previously written, I absolutely hated it and I scrapped that and had to redo it. So, it's like daredevil shit happening right here. Now, the story today is called Fish. The date I've given it is 31st. Does April even have 31 days? No, it does not. It has 30 days. So it's 30th April 1955. The time is 8:23. The story starts. Oh, how beautiful she looked. While she dried her hair, the slight breeze which sifted through the curtains make her locks get slightly more tangled. Imagine the story. You would feel such warm fuzzy feeling inside, and you're gonna hate me for destroying those feelings in the end, but still. She was looking out to the window onto the little kids. This Friday ritual of hers, she needed to cry. You know, there's this thing that I've seen with a lot of people, that they have rituals wherein they cry a lot. Subject themselves to specific kind of torture or stimulus which would create emotional problems. Continuing, I look at her from behind the mirror. She picks up the comb which fell on the floor using her feet. God bless her jeans. This is inspired from this Instagram thing I saw, that Taiwanese or like Indonesian women, they pick up everything using their feet. It's kind of a sixth sense that they have, and I can do that too. So I am in the competition, bitch. She, continuing with the story. Oh, and I'm going to try to stick to the script this time. She set the comb on her scalp. She tugged her hair swiftly, as if she was a missionary on a mission to kill innocence in the name of a peaceful god. I did it as I knew she'll pull more of her thinning hair than needed. It's like she heard me tut. She looked right at the mirror. She just gave me a smile when she said, Koi, you'll be up and running in 10 days. I'm waiting for you. Next, when I opened my eyes, I was here. Behind her mirror, looking at her every day as she dissociates a little from reality. That is the first paragraph. Oh my god. I am getting chills reading this one. And like, I wanted to speak so much about it, but a lot of you guys are like annoyed with me speaking too much. So I'm going to try to control that. I don't know how long I can do that, but this time I'm going to try to control that. Now, in the next timestamp that I've written is 8 years later, 4 hours after the dark, because my mind processed it as that if it's a ghost and they are in a mirror, I really doubt that they would have access to a calendar or like, you know, a watch or something. But then I was like, if they knew it was 1955 once upon a time and now it's 8 years plus, so it's like 1962, 1963. So it's 4 hours after the dark, so that's fine. That is something I can agree with. I continue writing. I outstretched my arms. They made the signature cracking sound, which used to annoy Carp. By the cracking sound, they mean this. Yep, the knuckles, this. I have an unlimited warehouse of all these sounds. So, this sound which used to annoy Carp. Now, it was simply buffered out by the water to a large extent. However, it didn't really buffer the sense of security and mystery it brought. Security and mystery, because mostly in all the fights in like the old cinema that I've seen, they like do this with their joints before about to fight. So I don't know, it gives some kind of power to them. It's fun. I continue reading. I looked around. The walls and the roof every day disintegrated even further. Every day it feels that the world falls apart. I'm not sure how the mirror still survives. Rather, how'd she leave it behind? She knew I was there. I'm sure she did. Why else would she smile at me like that? Though, never mind. Maybe this would just help me bounce off the mirror and off to wherever she is now, so I can tut at her whenever she's being mean to herself. This story at every turn of it is giving me this like warm fuzzy feeling, and that's half the reason why I wrote it in this manner. Okay, so he wants to go meet his wife again, so he can tut at her whenever she's being mean to herself. It's as if the water was waiting for me to say this, and something came rushing into me. It wasn't the debris, I'm sure. They don't fly like that. I mixed up a few words. As I gather myself, I hear the mirror cracking. With the mirror, there's blood, which I'm not sure isn't the mirror's. Dad jokes. Then I saw it. The magnificent thing, now impaled with glass shards. As it began to float upwards, I reached out to it. I was able to grab to it, but grab, not quite. I was able to extend myself towards it, enough to feel it. I'll tell you guys later. As I touched it, it's a body that fell onto the ground. It did nothing. Its blood made ribbons in front of me. And this like brought me to the question, do fish even have blood? Like if you cut a fish in water, will it give blood? Because I'm not sure if they do. And I tried to Google it up, but Google was showing me all sorts of weird nonsense there. And I really didn't have the time to, you know, like clarify the facts. So if fish do not have blood, I'm really sorry. If they do have blood, I'm God. I've created the world. I know everything in it. Okay. So those ribbons of blood, they tied together to make a knot. That knot somehow felt entering me and then disappearing within. That's what they said. I didn't really feel anything. What I felt was how I felt when they removed my heart. Or maybe through it, it felt as if little insects ran in synchronicity all over my body. I couldn't have gone below, so I started to come up. Basically, frantically, I frantically waved my legs, propelling me towards the surface. I was exceptionally fast. As the greenish musk started to get clearer, I would rather use the word greenish tint at this point, but I've written musk, but it should be tint. I was able to smell the breeze above. I extended my hand even further to perhaps even touch the breeze, but I was not able to. My shoulder made the same crackling sound as I did previously. My hand reached the surface and I jumped out. I got a glimpse of me. I was shaped like the black magic who came to free me. As fast as I came out, so fast as I went back in. My brain played the drum roll and said, "Welcome to your new cage." I'm sorry, it's a short one this time, and I'm sorry for that, but my original idea for this was not to make him a fish, but in the end, he would travel around in the lake, he would try to kill people and, you know, go through that serial killing ghost vibe. That was the initial idea for the story. But then I was like, for last few times, there's been a lot of killings, there's been too many gruesome things in the stories and the real life inspiration, and it kind of makes me sad. So this one, it's gonna be a fun episode, kind of fun, like still people are gonna die and they're still gonna be really gruesome things, but it won't be like, you know, over the top weird. So the main concept I need to tell you with this, because the concept was very nice, but I was not able to execute it properly, that he was trapped in the mirror. Once the mirror was broken, the lake's entire surface became his mirror. So he was able to float around in the entire lake and grab people and like kill people. And that was the initial idea. So there's that. Now, as I told you, this is the story of the haunted lake liner. I've been trying to find a proper way to sit on my chair such that I can properly in ease record the podcast, but I'm not able to. Sometimes I'm sitting cross-legged on a chair, which is not intended to do that. Sometimes I'm like laying in a weird manner and I'm suddenly uncomfortable, and then the wood starts to make weird noises, and then I have to change my position of sitting, but then my ass decides to make it uncomfortable again. So for the last 15 minutes, I've been trying to like sit properly, but I've not been able to. So if you hear these noises, it's the chair and me trying to like properly sit, and I'm sick of like cutting and re-recording it. So continuing with the true life inspiration. In November of 1877, a Georgia-born author, poet and musician, Sidney Lanier. Oh, this is why Lanier is the right pronunciation. Published what he considered to be the best poem that he has ever written. It was called The Song of Chattahoochee. I butchered the pronunciation, I'm pretty sure. The poem is absolutely amazing. It is written in occasions to echo the rhythmic ebb and flow of the river, and describes its journey, which starts from Habersham County to its end in Georgia's East Gulf coastal plains. Less than a century after him publishing the song or the poem, the landscape of northern Georgia were permanently altered. Where the river once flowed, through the fertile hills and valleys, there was nothing but waters for miles in every direction. So this is when the Chattahoochee River was dammed and Georgia's greatest lake was created. A body of water named after the state's greatest poet, Sidney Lanier. But like technically they did destroy all his legacies by completely changing the entire surroundings on which he wrote his biggest best works. But anyway, there's a lot of hypocrisy in the entirety of American existence in specific. So now what happened is, in 1946, the United States Army Corps of Engineers was charged with the task to dam the Chattahoochee River in order to create a reservoir for, or like a man-made lake providing hydroelectricity, navigation, flood control of the river. This was basically to serve as the beach for the city of Atlanta, where basically the Carringtons live, the dynasty people, reference to that. However, before any work was commenced, the United States government had to purchase the land from people, and which was soon to be become the bottom of the lake. And the land was where this place was already developed and settled. The first of these many transactions was in 1948 with Henry Sadburn, an 81-year-old ferryman in Forsyth County, Georgia. He sold his 100-acre farm, which was known as Shadburn's Ferry, to the United States for $4,100. And the following 2 years, the government continued to purchase about 50,000 acres of prime fertile land and bottom land from individuals and corporate businesses alike. The land was basically very cheap. It sold for less than $50 per acre. It is reported that the landowners were also paid for each building that they were leaving behind. I mean, so there were like a lot of buildings which were abandoned. There was one specific apple cider stand which was moved and abandoned when all was said and done. Now, some of them were torn down, especially the wooden buildings, because of obvious reasons of rot and such. Now, any building structure that were tall enough to extend the depth of 45 feet at the water level were removed. Several blocks, building structures weren't nearly as tall enough, so they've like remain at the bottom of the lake liner, mostly in a decomposing state. I've seen videos of this on YouTube. Like, the lake is very green and there's a lot of debris all over. Alright, and it's unknown how many families were exactly relocated in the entire process, but the range is from 250 to 700, which is basically a huge ass range. Now, a very unreliable report said that. So, about this case, and I feel a lot of things which are paranormal, usually there's a lot of unreliable shit all around it. Okay, so this unreliable case said that the residents who refused to sell their land had it forcibly seized, and they were removed from their properties, which was left to be overtaken by water. And construction of the Buford Dam, now called Buford Dam, began on the 1st March 1950, which took about 6 years to complete. And out of these 6 years, 5 years took just to fill up the lake to the required water level. Now, $45 million were put into the entire project. By 1956, the backwaters of the Chattahoochee River began to fill up the dry crevices and the valley of northern Georgia foothills. Now, the required level for the lake was specifically 1,051.71 feet above the sea level. And as I said, to reach its full capacity, it took between 3 to 5 years. By this time, most of the signs of the past human habitation were drowned by the water. The destruction caused by the lake's creation was more than just of family houses. Total of 6 churches, the blasphemy, 15 businesses were moved and reconstructed elsewhere. While majority of these relocated buildings were wooden structures, those made of concrete and brick were basically abandoned and left to be consumed by the rising water. In addition, the weird thing about the entire thing is that there were 20 total cemeteries and who were removed, and their remains were disturbed and moved to other places. Now, most of these were smaller family-based cemeteries, which are common in the Northeast Georgia. It's like the rich, fancy people, they have little cemeteries of their own. In spite of the effort to ensure that the dead were respected, it is unlikely that the resident of every small family was dead family member was securely moved before the water level rose. Today, it's nearly impossible to determine everything that was lost. Growing waters indiscriminately consumed everything in its path, and everything was basically engulfed by everything. Yeah, by water. Too much of everything's bad. The entire town of Oscarville in Georgia was consumed. The businesses, roads, everything. All right. Now, and the remains of the ferries, the once used transportation mechanism, were left to sit cane along the bottom of the lake and on its shoreline at times. It was like easier to just let them rot everything there instead of like relocating and like wrap, like, you know, respecting each and everything, guys, I'd say. Now these places were places where people lived, obviously, and the most memorable loss was of the Looper Speedway, which was a half mile dirt track which was located on the old Cleveland Highway at the point which is now the Laurel Park. The track was owned by Max Looper and his nephew Edwin Looper, who worked there in high school. Edwin often described his time there as, "We watered down the track before each race. We couldn't race on Sundays and Gainesville back then, so they ran races on Saturdays, mostly in the 39's Ford Coupes. There was one guy who ran an old Plymouth, but these races stopped in 1950s as the backwaters of the lake liner crept closer, forcing the communities of the beloved speedway to evacuate for good. Now, it was only in 2001 that when a severe drought came up, which dropped the lake's level 15 feet below the full capacity, allowing the top rows of the Looper Sideway old concrete grandstand to be briefly exposed once again, like an eerie reminder of a very distant fading memory. Now, that was a lot of history, and let's talk about the incidents which happened here. Now, one fun thing about Lake Liner is that enough people died there that the average that we can put out before 2020 was one person died every month. Now, some people, the deconstruction and everything, it's kind of sad, the lack of respect which is given to stuff around, which is also the point of my story, that there was a ghost living in the house, one of the houses, and when the water filled up and such, they were trapped there. Now, the lake is becoming more and more famous or infamous for the number of its deaths which occur in the water. Like, some of them are very simple, like boating accidents, drowning, to cars like simply sliding off the road and drowning in the water. But there are some which are a lot more darker and sinister than that. So almost all the accidents which have happened, there's no real data behind them. Like, they did not happen for, like, since it's an accident, it did not happen for like an obvious reason, but all of them are not specific. I do not know how to use my words at the moment. Like, all of them are not, you know, clear as such. I mean, due to the pandemic, a lot of recent deaths are unaccounted for, as the issues weren't properly reported. So the data that I'm going to present to you is still February 2020. Now, till that time, the number of deaths associated with the lake is 675. Some years, upward of 20 people have lost their life in these waters. There has been a lot of stories that boats capsize after hitting something in the water, have been told. Yet the area searched where the accident happened, nothing of significant size that could have caused the accident was found. Other purports of incidents and occurrences were dangerous rogue waves which seemed to come out of nowhere, capsize a boat, and then disappear. Especially Strange are many tragic stories of drowning which have a pattern according to which they first frequently occur close to shore in calm water conditions, and second, because the victims are people who are considered to be strong swimmers, it's even weirder. Like, it's not very deep, it's close to the shore, and the people are experienced swimmers. Now, weirdly enough, those who have survived a near drowning in the lake have reported being dragged beneath the water, which felt like invisible hands, which was basically the concept of my initial story. Now, for all the tragic deaths, the most notorious one is the Lady of Lake Liner. It should be the Lady of the Lake Liner, basically, but that's what the internet told me. So what happened was, in 1958, 2 years after the bridge over the lake opened, Delia Parker Young and Susie Roberts sped out of gas station without paying en route to a nearby town of Townsville. Now, for people who do not understand, is they just like whoosh and upped and left. So they lightly... excuse me. Their feet likely thumped to pulse of some kind of fun music such as King Carol, as the I am back. So these two women, they, where is it? So the two rebels were headed on the run to the Three Gables Roadhouse, but they never made it home. And so they were basically a missing persons case. And it was 18 months after that a local fisherman spotted a decomposing body of a woman beneath the bridge. It was kind of a gruesome scene, a bloated body. And, you know, when a body is exposed to the water, there's this thing called skin drifting, which happens. Basically, the skin of the body becomes loose and it like kind of shifts and makes it look even like very, very weird. And the two toes from her left foot were missing, and the arms buoyed vainly without hands. The appendages have perhaps been fallen victim to like the traumatic end or the fishes eating them. All right, the body was not really identified by the coroners, but the locals near the area were convinced of the identity. The body was of Delia Parker Young. They knew it was Delia because dozens of drivers on the state route had seen her after she vanished, appearing as a ghostly, handless apparition, sauntering down the highway in a blue dress. Oh my god, my vocabulary. The ghost appeared, they say, to be lost, almost as if she was searching, but nobody could say for what. Decades passed as her legend grew into a local myth. Now, visiting the old bridge has become a rite of passage at the local high school. Generation of young thrill seekers go there to look for the Lady of Lake Liner. Some return to school the next day swearing that they'd seen her, others are like, now. And like, she exhibits classic symptoms of residual hauntings, which is basically a phenomenon which parapsychologists describe as an apparition which appears more like a recording of a previous event than an proper interactive entity. According to experts, the residual hauntings are most often found at locations of traumatic events where the energy of heightened emotions fuse to become the ghost, but the ghost is not really a ghost per se. Now, the other girl, Susie Roberts, was basically forgotten through the entire time. For all practical purposes, there was little evidence left from the final ride of the Ford sedan. No fabric remaining but the bridge, the highway, and a myth. Now, that's when fate intervened. Years of wear and tear finally caught up with the bridge, and as work began on the renovations, it would expand and drift. The bridge construction workers dredging the bottom of the lake made a startling discovery. Filled with mud, half buried on the lake's bottom, they found the twisted wreckage of the 1954 Ford. The bones of Susie Roberts were still inside. This was November 1990. Dental records soon verified her identity and the discovery made national headlines. Finally, after 34 years, residents of Georgia had a definitive answer to their mystery. Susie Roberts and Dahlia Parker Young had a runoff road high top atop the bridge, and the unmarked tomb was relabeled in Dahlia's name. And the Lady of Lake Liner, some say that you can still find her wandering around the back roads of the State Route 54, slowly making her way to the Downsville to the top of the old bridge. It's the tragedy which is associated with the most persistent legend of the lake. Now, there are a lot of apparitions which haunt the lake. One of the most famous one is a raft which is seen floating on the lake late at night. It is like inhabited or like possessed by a shadowy figure pushing along with a pole. There's a lantern on it, and those who claim to have seen this apparition say it appears and disappears out of nowhere. One such sighting was reported by two fishermen who claimed to have seen it at 1 a.m. on a cold autumn night. The raft was stopped in a section of the lake that is to be roughly 45 feet deep, yet the raft riders seemed to have no difficulty navigating the deep waters with just a little pole to push him. Like, pole is technically supposed to like push on the ground in order to like, you know, row you ahead. Now the two fishermen watched the figure travel along before it suddenly shouted and jumped from the raft into the freezing waters, and I'm getting goosebumps. Afraid that something was coming for them, the fishermen quickly pulled up their lines and prepared to leave the area. But when they shined the light across the water at the specific area, there was no sign of the raft or the figure in the daft surface of the lake, which was now totally calm and undisturbed. Whew! If nothing large had like really disrupted them, it was quiet. Those who believe this tale to be true believe that this figure is an echo of the past, when man traveled the shallow rivers of the creeks among the first hill of the north in Georgia, and now consumed by the Lake Liner. As I mentioned before, like, there's not a lot of information after Feb 2020 because of COVID, but there was one specific incident which was able to make it to news channels amidst the pandemic. It's an article from July 25th, 2020. And the incident was that of Gainesville, of a teenager called Christopher Acosta Farias of Gainesville. He was 17 and he drowned in the lake while he was swimming. Incidents like these happened a lot, but this one was able to make it to the news channels. And it was basically after a very long time. It is sad, but yeah. Today, there's no doubt that Lake Liner is an economic boom to the state of Georgia. Like, originally it was just supposed to be a reservoir, but soon it became like a recreational center, which is also a hazard because people just leave their boats there to drown. A study in 2002 was conducted by the Marine Trade Association of Metropolitan Atlanta, which estimated the economic impact of the lakes exceeded $5.5 billion annually. And since 1957, the powerhouse generators located at the dam have produced more than $96 million in hydroelectricity. Additionally, the dam served as like a flood control for the entire region. The lake continues to host up to 8 million visitors annually, of which like 68 parks, areas, 122 campgrounds, more than 1,200 campsites. It's the largest lake in Georgia. It's 26 miles long, with 692 miles of shoreline, covering more than 39,000 acres of water, reaching depths to as near as 211 feet near the dam. It's basically deeper than the Statue of Liberty. Yet all this beauty, so-called beauty, I'd say, comes at a loss of family, communities, human development, a high number of death, and so on. And you know, like, the lake is There were these two incidents which I have not written in my notes, but I remember them off my head in this podcast that I heard, Ghost Town, I believe it was, that there was this woman, there was this girl who was very quiet and quaint, and she went to the near the lake like at night, and she was stabbed 17 or 7 times, and there was no real, you know, reasoning behind it, like no suspect was found in that. And then there was this other person who was visiting the doctor and ended up drowning in the lake, and it was not even in the route. So yeah, the lake is pretty damn fucked up. And today's episode is actually rather short. It did not cross the 1 hour mark that I expected it to. All fine, cool. So the podcast is brought to you by who am I? Yeah, the podcast is hosted by Koi On Air, co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy. You can reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram as @KoiOnAir. You can send me your listeners' stories, your own stories, if you want me to rewrite them or read your email as it is, on koi@madebynifix.com. And that's about it, my beautiful cold fishes, or dragons, as some people would like to be called. Bye-bye.